Good morning, family. My name's Tom, and I'm a recovering alcoholic and an addict.
Hey, Tom.
I thought we were taking a cigarette break first. You totally shocked this one on me, Shelly. Thanks. Yeah, I was going to go out to my car, and I was going to read something out of my 24-hour daily reflections, but I guess that's not going to happen. I'm just going to go with what God gives me. Give me a second, please. All right. I just want to thank Razor's Edge for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope. And my friends were coming out to hear my story today. I guess I'll start it a little bit at the beginning. I'm here to share in a general way my what happened, what it's like, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. My experience, strength, and hope. My childhood was, you know, everybody starts out with the childhood stuff, you know, and it's just like, it all started for me, the bad stuff. My mom and dad got a divorce when I was like 8 years old, and I noticed from then that things kind of were not right with me, you know, and I would just do things to get attention, and you know, and just had a lot of anger, you know, and pretty much went on like that for many years. I had a mom that was just trying to take care of us, support us, and feed us, and I had a dad, on the other hand, it was a weekend guy to pick us up on Fridays. Every Friday he'd be there, or Saturday morning, and I got to go to a bar with him immediately. You know, I got told by my sponsor not to mention names or anything, so it's gonna, you'll kind of figure out as I go along with who I'm talking about. But you know, I learned at a young age how to, you know, I learned from a man that I seen on weekends to lie, cheat, steal, hurt, and abuse everybody and destroy everything, which I did as I grew up. I destroyed anything and everything in my path. My anger, I could be nice 1 minute and angry the next. And when I was angry, it was horrible, you know. I learned, you know, at a young age how to, and this is what I used as an excuse for the way I was till I was 52 years old. I used the excuse that by the way I got raised is the way that was okay to act the way I did. And I found out later in life it wasn't. I know I'm kind of jumping around here. I'm sorry. Okay, I guess what I'm trying to say is when I was growing up, I was raised to, I didn't have respect for women. I learned not to have respect for women. You know, I learned to, that violence was an answer for everything, and drinking and drugging was a part of that too, you know. So as I got older, and about 14 years old, I started drinking. By 15 years old, I was able to buy liquor. So, and right from the get-go, I was the guy that would continue to drink. I was the guy that couldn't stop, you know. I was the guy, as soon as I picked up and I could buy or I could get something, I used it to excess, you know, and right from the get-go. But I didn't see a problem with that, you know. And it just, you know, I did it at school. You know, I'd go to school, and my mom would try to get me up in the mornings to go to school, and I would tell her, you know, to get away from me, you know. Or she'd take me to school, and I'd walk out the other door and beat her home, you know. I was a guy that just, I just had no control in my life, and I just lived in chaos, you know. In my head, I didn't know where I was going, you know. Boy, whew, I just got to take a breath here. So you know, it'd be like I'd go to school, and we'd get beer and stuff. We had a little shack when I was out in Econimalk. We had this little shack that we'd go in and drink on the weekends, on lunch hours. And we called ourselves the Brew Crew, you know. And we made up a song. There's a guy to play guitar. So we'd go to this little shack, and we would drink at lunch hour, and we had this song. This guy had this guitar. You know, we are the crew that sucks the brood. We'd rather whatever. Blah blah blah. So we would do that, and then everybody else would go back to school, and I would stay in this little shack. And, you know, because that's what I did. You know, I didn't want to go back. Once I got alcohol in me or anything, that's what I did, you know. And that continued for years. And then I had quit school. I didn't want to go to school anymore. My mom would beg me to go to school, and I would just tell her to get out of my room, you know. I wasn't very nice to her, you know. And she had, my brother had bought me a bong once for Christmas, and I told her, it's just a decoration. So one day I come back from school and I find pieces of this bong all over the floor. There's a bowl there and this is there, you know. And I said, why'd you do that? She said, because you were smoking with it, you know. And I understand that today, because I had a little stepbrother that my mom moved in with this guy, and I had a little stepbrother who was 12 years old, you know. And back in them days, I had ran into some people that at 15 years old, I was dealing pounds of pot, you know. And I had all this in my house. I had it stashed here and stashed there. And my little brother, he's sleeping in the bed next to me. I was getting him high. He's 12 years old. He wanted to go downstairs and tell his dad he's seeing bears, you know? I mean, how sick is that, you know? Here, and I'm telling him, no, you can't do that, you know? He goes, no, but there's bears outside, and we're upstairs. He's, there's bears outside. No, there's not, you know? And so, how sick is that, you know? And I would just go on to just continue that. And everything in my life from that point was based on alcohol or drugs. I smoked pot. I didn't like pot so much, you know. That's why I could actually sell it and make money, because I didn't do it all like I did cocaine. But it was just, from that point, it was just, my whole life just revolved around moving to different places, because I couldn't keep a job. People didn't want to be around me, because anybody around me, friends or anything, I destroyed immediately. You know, you could be my friend for a little while, but the next thing you know, I was either punching you, hitting you, you know, trying to steal your girlfriend, whatever it would be, you know. I had knew of God, but raised a Catholic, and I knew of God, but I didn't have a relationship with God, you know. So here I am going through my life, and I just struggling, you know, and just going from place to place, and just, you know, like I said, just stealing and just doing stuff like that. So now I get into cocaine a little while later in the 80s. Did that for about a year, and then I noticed that was a problem right away too. But I just happened to be able to quit, you know. I was very, like I said, I was always a very angry person. I was not nice to my children, you know. I was not nice to my first wife. I was not nice to anybody, you know. My kids had to put up with the brunt of that. My first set of kids that I had with my first wife, you know, I was just very angry, very violent, very not a very nice person. and then I went into my second marriage, and then I joined. You know, I was there, and I still wasn't. You know, I wasn't a good dad. I tried to be a good dad, but I just couldn't do it, you know, and it just the drink and everything just got bad. And then I decided, because I always wanted to be the top, the guy on top, you know, and that's the whole thing. I always wanted to be, you know, the head of everything, the head of my family, the head of everything, you know. I controlled everybody and everything, you know. So as I go through my second marriage, decide to get this bike and run into some guys, and I joined this motorcycle club. And there, finally, I'm at where I want to be, you know, because now I can act and do whatever I want to do, you know, in a way, you know. So I do my probating, I do my whatever, I get patched, and now I can, you know, I'm the kind of guy that's gonna be on top, and it takes a long time, most times, to get to the top. But the way I acted, I got there quick, because that's how I worked. You know, everything I did in my life, you know, it just, I don't know. But anyway, that's where I got to show my anger, you know, and it came out a lot, you know. And but by living that life, it, oh boy, I'm kind of all over the board here. This is my first time speaking, and everybody can go, aw, but.
You're doing good.
So anyway, so I get in this motorcycle club, and I wanted to be on top, okay? So I do whatever I could do, and I was just doing all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, and I got to the top. You know, within 2 years, I was at the top of the club when I was a sergeant at arms, and I could do pretty much whatever I wanted. And people, I didn't care about nobody or anything, you know. And that was the thing, I didn't have a conscience, I didn't have anything, you know. I always carried a gun, and I didn't like anybody that didn't wear a patch, the same patch I wore, you know. And it's, You know, I'm not going to mention another club, but there was another guy in town that shouldn't have been in our territory because it was our territory. People got to be today, but we'll talk about that later. But at that time, if you were in our territory, you didn't belong there. And, you know, I had a knife to his throat, and everybody's like, stop. My nickname was Chuckles back then, you know, and I had a knife to his throat, I was ready to kill him, you know, and everybody's like, stop, stop, you know. And that's the stuff I do. I'd shoot my own club brother if he got in my way. You know what I mean? Because there was instances where things would happen in the club. People try to take over and stuff. And I was that guy that would just, you know, I just, hey, you know, you're not doing this. You know what I mean? I had to be in control of everything, you know. And that carried out into the streets and other clubs. And everybody, as they got to know me, that's where Tom got his high. You know, now here I am. I'm at the top of what I thought was my life. You know? Because now all of a sudden I'm this guy that people listen to. People come from Green Bay to Chicago out to Madison. If you mention Chuckles, people knew you, you know, because I was just crazy. You know, I would do whatever, and I did whatever, you know. And it was just, I was on the high for a while. And then I started doing a lot more. Then I got divorced. My second wife didn't want to put up with me anymore. So in 1998, she's had enough, you know. I just remember the craziness, you know, because it was just like, you know, having guns around and just the crazy stuff that she had to put up with me, you know. And I couldn't blame her for not wanting to be with me. I couldn't blame anybody for not wanting to be around me, you know. You know, I remember an instance when she wanted me to finally leave, and she left, and she was so scared that she called the cops to have them come over because I had, you know, because of the guns I had in the house and stuff, you know. And here's the cops knocking at the door downstairs. You know, hey, you gotta let us in. We gotta, you know. I said, well, my wife's not here. Well, we got a phone call that you got guns, and next thing you know, they're in the house searching, and you know, I got guns and stuff. And then I had a sawed-off shotgun. They picked it up. They looked at it. They looked at me, but it wasn't the right time and the right place. You know, so they put it back, and I got it out of the house right after that. You know, but I was a very violent, very just not caring about anybody or anything person. You know. From there, that lasted till like 2000, and in 1998, I was working, I came out to Waukesha, because me and my wife got a divorce in 98, and I needed a place to stay, so I came out by a friend named Scott's house out here, and they let me live in their house for a while, which was, you know, nobody wanted me to live in their house, you know. It was just crazy. And that's when I was working out here, and I got introduced to CA, and I got to meet the people that invited, that invited me to speak today are the people that I first met in 1998 when I came into these rooms. I was working at a job, and the job said, hey, you need to go get some help. You're coming late for work. You know, you're not doing your job right. You know, we know you're drinking and you need some help, you know. Well, if it's going to make you happy, I don't got a problem, but if it's going to make you happy. So I came to the rooms, and I got to meet you people, you know. And I still didn't think I had a problem. So I went out there, and I did what they wanted me to do. And then I ended up losing that job because, of course, I just wanted to live Tom's life, you know. It just goes on from there. I never lived in the same place. You know, it's like I lived there for a while, and then I moved somewhere else. I get a job here. I get a job there. I was never controlled. I guess what I'm trying to say is, till about 2 years ago, I had no control of my life. I was always moving. I was always moving around. I was always getting different jobs. I couldn't control anything. But I thought I was in total control. And I thought it was all good, you know? But then I guess I got into smoking crack cocaine. About 2002, that's what brought me down. I was for a while, and then somebody had put this pipe in front of me, and they said, here, take a hit of this. I said, you know, I usually beat up people like you, you know? I said, I was in a motorcycle club, we can do any drug but crack cocaine, you know? And I said, you know, so anyway, I ended up taking a hit. And when I took that hit, it was like the best thing that ever happened in my life, you know. At that time, it was like the euphoria within seconds was there, and oh boy, here's where it all began, you know. So now I'm smoking crack cocaine, just every penny I have, and all the time, you know. Just like I said, destroying everything, and I got a settlement once, and I bought a nice Cadillac, bought a car, bought this and that, guns, every gun you can imagine, and I lost it all because of that. You know, I was just, it was just, I'll sell this so I can get another hit, this to get another hit, here's a gun, give me, you know, whatever, you know, and it's just insane, the things that I did once I found crack cocaine. Not that my life wasn't already insane already, you know, but now it's really going to get bad. So the alcohol, you know, like I said, the alcohol was bad. I am an alcoholic, but I haven't drank in probably 7 years. Once I found crack cocaine, I didn't need anything else. You know, that was it, man. That was it. So so I proceeded to just work when I could, and buy my drugs on the weekends, and I'd get my check on a Friday, and it'd be gone by the next day. You know, I'd be taking my cars and giving them for crack cocaine, come bring back money next week to buy my car back. So the same day, paying him, getting more, and then giving my car back again. My guns, like I said, everything. It was just, I thought I hit my bottom a couple of times. I thought my bottom was because I had lost my kids. All right, I had lost my family. And it wasn't my bottom, you know. I thought, you know, I thought that, oh boy, I'm all nervous here, but, yeah, I thought my bottom was losing all my family and everything else, and which I did. I had lost pretty much my brother, my sister-in-law wouldn't even talk to me anymore. My son wouldn't talk to me. I actually stole from him. You know, it's just, it was horrible, you know. My daughter wouldn't talk to me. My mom was the only one that was pretty much hanging on in there for me, you know, and that was pretty much it. I lost everybody, and, you know, I would sleep in, I would, like, go to crack houses, and they would even, you know, I'd end up sleeping on floors, and it came to a point that they didn't even want me there anymore. Even though I had money, I could have $400 or $500 in my pocket, but they didn't want me there anymore, because they didn't want me to die there. Dude's like, dude, I love your money, you know? He said, you spend an awful lot of money here every week. He goes, but you can't, I don't even want you coming here anymore. He said, you smoke crack so fast. He said, I watch your heart race. I watch you sweat. He said, you're going to die. He said, you're not dying in my house. As much as I want your money, I don't want you here. You know, how crazy is that? You know, it's just, it was just crazy. And I was the guy that was always played the tough guy. But when I did crack cocaine, I was the guy that, you know, I'm not going to lie. I was always, like I was saying, I was beating people up or I was hurting people and stuff. Now I was the guy that got robbed. I'm not going to lie. I'm a big guy. I got nothing to hide today, you know. When I used, you know, people knew I had a lot of money. So they would come, you know, and I got robbed a couple of times. You know, guns, knives, whatever, and they'd steal my money, you know. And I'm not ashamed to say that today, you know. I was at a, just... Before my sobriety date is April 1st, 2012. April 1st, so God willing, April 1st, I will have a year of sobriety, which is a week from now. And I guess I'll just get to the story to where how I came to this today. You know, I was at a house. I just met Lisa. Lisa's my girlfriend, by the way. And I stopped. And here's the story of that, too, because as I wanted to get sober, you know, I was around these rooms for 13 and a half years, okay? In 13 and a half years, I kept going out, and everybody goes, like, why do you keep going out, Tom? How many chips do you actually have, newcomer chips? Is it like a box? I don't know, you know? Why don't you give them back, and then we might not have to buy any for a while, you know? So it's like, you know, and that's what I did, you know? I just kept coming back, but I always came back. I knew there was something here, you know? But then I just couldn't stop using though, you know. So all of a sudden I give the women too to God, you know. It was like I was a womanizer, and I was, you know, and I was just a bad person, you know. And I said I give up women because I wouldn't date usually women over 30 years old, you know. And it was like, and it's just the way I was, you know. And it was just, you know, it was crazy. And then I finally gave it up, and I said, you know what, God, when you want me to have a woman, you know, that's when it'll be. So I'm working, I'm going into this Quick Trip gas station, and getting fuel all the time with this company, and all of a sudden this woman's kind of following me around all the time, you know, and I'm just like, well, what's going on here, you know? So my buddy Big Kevin, you guys know Big Sexy, he invites me to this Christmas party on December 10th of 2010, and I asked this woman to come with me, which is Lisa, and we've hit it off from then, and we've been together since then. She's had to go through some stuff with me because obviously I've relapsed, you know, but when we do that, when we give it to God, He just takes care of us, you know. I'm not skirt chasing anymore, you know. I'm not, I don't have to be with a 30-year-old woman to make my pride better, you know, to make me think I'm a better man, you know. Lisa got to see one bad spot, a couple of bad spots, but she had to come pick me up once because a gentleman that, some of my friends know real well too, that I had went to an adult rehabilitation center at the Salvation Army Adult Rehabilitation Center in Milwaukee on Jackson from February 8th of 2010 till September 8th, which was my last inpatient somewhere. And a man named Shelby, a Christian man, helped me out a lot then, you know, and he'd given me a car when I came out of there and let me use a car until I could afford one and help me out, get my birth certificates and get me all stuff to get me set up, you know. And I took this car and I went and used one day. So here I am. All of a sudden, I'm in this house and I'm using. And I hear this big crash. Somebody comes in the room and they're like, somebody just hit your car. You know, I'm like, oh shit. Here I am all full of, you know, cracked up. I don't want to see nobody. You know? And it's just like, hell no. You know, and it's just like, so all of a sudden, bam, somebody hits it again. Oh, man, look out there. It's toast. This car is toast. And this person's going, you got to go outside. And all I wanted, here's the addict that I am, all I wanted was another hit. Can I please have another hit? Tom, your car is outside. It's totaled. You need to go out there. And I'm like, come on, please. You know, this is the guy that I'm talking, big tough guy, right? I'm begging. Please, can I have another hit? Give me another hit. You know, so like, dude, you got to go, you know? That's how crazy I was when I used crack cocaine. You know, the guy that was a big tough guy turned into some little puppy. You know, and some just addicted, just down so low to this drug. It just took me away that far, you know. So I ended up calling Lisa, you know. And she came and got me. You know, she's never been in the hood before. You know, I had to explain to her how to get down there. You know, I'm trying to get out this door and skirt around all these cops that are all around a smashed up car, you know. And, man, and that's not the first time something like that's happened, you know? You would think after all these times that I would have learned something from all the things, you know, getting robbed myself, you know, and all this other stuff, that I would have learned from that. And I just couldn't, you know, that's the addiction, you know? But I always knew there was something that was gonna, you know, that God was there. So his car's all smashed up. Lisa brings me home, blah, blah, blah. And I finally, it just, you know, because in the program, it's, you know, it says we admitted to our addiction, you know, admitted we're powerless and our lives have become unmanageable, you know. And I could never understand that, you know. It was like, you know, I'm not powerless, you know, I can do this and that. Life's unmanageable, nah, you know. But then after a while, like, within the last 2 years, it came more and more to me that, yeah, I was powerless. I am powerless. And my life is unmanageable. Or this and this wouldn't have happened, obviously. You know? Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Okay. You know, at first I'm just like, oh God, here we go with this religion thing. You know? But it turned out that I had to. You know, I had to believe that, you know, someone could bring me to sanity. You know, but I could never, ever get made a decision to turn our will and lives over to care of God as we understood Him. I could never, ever get that one. And that's why I always stayed out there in that insanity. That's why I was always crazy. That's why I always wanted another hit. That's why I begged for a hit. You know, there's so many stories that I could tell you, and that's why I'm not here. I'm not here to give my, you know, like a drug log or something like that. I'm just giving you a basic, you know, general way what it was kind of like for me. There's a lot more, but you guys would be here for days, you know. So that's kind of like what it was. Now I'm going to get to where, you know, I finally going to get to where I am today, you know. And and I had friends like Mike, him and Bull, came to a hotel that I was at. I was smoking crack, you know, and they're like, Mike's like, you got to go, man. He knocks on the door, you got to go. And his best friend as he was of mine, you know, I told him, no, you got to go. He begged me to come with him. And I told him, no, I'm staying, you know. This is how crazy it was, you know. That wasn't me. That was my addiction, you know. The man I am today is because finally why I get to stand at this podium and tell my story is because of God. You know, for me, it's God, you know. And what happened was finally made a decision because I figured nothing else was working for me. So I made a decision to turn will and life over to care of God as we understood him. And that's when the miracle happened for me. That's when it happened for me. And from that day on, when I made that decision, it's just amazing how things just started to fall together. You know, going to meetings wasn't keeping me sober. You know, doing events with people, you know, and stuff wasn't keeping me sober. I needed something else. Sure, everything goes hand in hand, but the thing is that we have to have some kind of, I had to have something else besides that, you know. And for me, it turned out to be, which a lot of people don't have a higher power as in God, and but today I do. And by making that decision to turn my will and life over to care of God as I understand him, as we understood him, I get to live today, you know. I get to do this. I get to be a good dad. I get to be a good son. I get to be a good friend, a father, brother, you know. I'm on a committee now for, what's cool is, here's how God works, okay? A couple of years ago, a friend introduced me to a group called MAC, Midwest Motorcycle Alcoholics Anonymous Convention out of Rockford, Illinois. And I went out there about 3 years ago, and then sure I was on the committee for it. They let me on a committee even though I wasn't sober all the time, you know? And I'm a volunteer coordinator. And this year I'm on the committee again. And I never had a bike, but I went, you know? And it kind of hurt a lot, and stuff. I was like, man, I've got a bike, got a bike. So anyway, so now I'm on a committee again this year, and I get to ride a bike there this year. And here's how God works, because, you know, he took a guy that was broken down, and with my will, I bought things. You know, like I said, I had Cadillacs, I had cars, I had whatever. You know, you can have the whole spew. You know, I don't care what you got. You know, it's if I got it myself, I lost it. You know, the way I live today is whatever I have is God. You know, God did everything. I have to do the footwork, but God is the one that, you know, by the grace of God and the fellowship, I'm here today. You know, what God did for me was he took and he got me a bike. At least I didn't plan on getting a bike last year. We didn't plan on to get in this spring. And if we could spend $5,000, it was going to be some kind of junk. It was going to be something just to ride, right? All of a sudden, a friend comes in from Florida that I haven't seen for a while, and I owe him some money. That's another thing, you know, financial amends. So he comes into town. I said, come on and meet me. And my daughter Haley just happened to be there that day in the car, and I made financial amends with this gentleman from Florida. And he said, Tom, and this was last June. He said, I like where you're at today. He goes, I'm having problems. Thank you for paying me what you owed me. He goes, but I can't ride anymore. I got mold in my lungs, and I got some heart issues, and I'm selling my bike. And he told me how much he wanted for it and what it looked like. And I was like, I can't afford that. He sent me pictures. And I was like, whoa. I never thought I could have something like this, you know. So I didn't have the money. And we just couldn't do it. Talked to my sponsor, Marty, which is my sponsor. Marty has been my sponsor for 2 years now. Great gentleman. I don't know where he's hiding. There he is. Hi, Marty. And Marty's walked, and I don't do anything without talking to Marty, no, or friends. I don't make decisions on my own anymore, because all the decisions I ever made were pretty crappy. So Marty says, Tom, you don't have the money, so what are you thinking about it for, you know? So 20 days later, all of a sudden, money comes here, money comes there. 20 days later, and all of a sudden, we've got, like, a lot of money to make in 20 days. And all of a sudden, I said, Marty, I got this amount of money in the bank. And I said, and that bike you see, he still got it. And I go, but I'm in the middle of financial amends. Is it right for me to take away from Peter to pay Paul? You know what I mean? Is it right for me to break off from my financial amends to buy this bike? And he goes, no, it's not right to do that. He goes, but what is right is as long as you continue, you're already doing your financial amends, as long as you continue and you can afford to do your financial amends, I think you should get the bike. He said, nobody gets that kind of money in 20 days for nothing. He said, I think it's going to be a big part of your sobriety, you know? So, bought the bike. And it's more than I ever asked for. God had given me something just beautiful, you know? And that's how God works, you know? And it is, and it's a part of Mac this year. I'll be riding, and we have June 21st, 22nd, 23rd of this year. Every year we have about 550 to 600 sober bikers come out to Mac and by Rockford, Illinois every year for 3 days. And we do pre-convention stuff. And right now they allowed me, I'm on a committee and I'm out of Wisconsin. And there's also somebody here, us here that's on the committee too. And they said, I mentioned having a poker run. I said, everybody's not going to want to do it. It's always in Rockford. I said, well, you know, everybody's not going to want to come to Rockford and then drive 75 miles and put on a poker run and blah, blah, blah. And then leave and come back at night. So, well, what are you thinking, Tom? Well, why don't we do it somewhere in the center? So they let me set up for Mac. I'm setting up a poker run, which I already have a church. I've got a speaker, and we've got, you know, road captains, and we're all set up for May 18th to have a poker run here in Wisconsin, where Rockford, West Bend, and Biker Mike's actually going to be a speaker that day. And people are going to be coming from Racine, and we're all going to meet in Elkhorn, and we're going to have a bike blessing, and we're going to have a speaker, and it's going to be some fellowship, and it's going to be a good time. And that's what God does for me today, you know? So I don't know how to stress the relationship, the spirituality part. See, because we have religion. People think religion, you know, as soon as we start talking, they're like, oh God, that God thing, you know? But it's not about religion to me today, you know? Sure, you know, I go to church, you know? But it's about spirituality. And I couldn't get sober. I could not stay sober until I gave it all to God and until my heart was filled. I was an empty shell. Remember I was talking earlier about how the bottom was, I thought, you know, might be cars or guns or stuff like that. My bottom was finally when I was an empty shell. There was nothing left in me. I felt empty. And today I feel full. You know? And I feel full because I have that spirit in me. You know? Spirituality is way different than religion to me. You know? Spirituality. I wanted to bring in my Daily Reflections book because on March 19th in Daily Reflections, which was also my birthday, and it was a really cool one. It mentioned how even if you're agnostic, the guy was an agnostic, didn't believe in God, you know, nothing. But he's seen how other people stayed sober, you know, and he's just like, okay. He goes, you know, so everybody that doesn't even believe in God can pray, you know. Everybody has something in them that tells them there's something else there, you know. Whether we don't believe in God or not, there's something in us. Like even if something goes wrong, you know, we always get that gut instinct, you know? And that gut instinct isn't us, it's something else, you know? And to me, it's spirituality, for me, it's God, you know? I have an awesome personal relationship with my higher power today. You know, some people say I carry things too far today. Here's a guy that didn't care about the law, didn't care about nothing before, right? But now all of a sudden I get told on just before Christmas, I went to go buy this awesome, I already had guns, but I went to go buy this awesome assault rifle, AR-15. And I check the thing and the guy says, you can't have a gun. I can't sell that to you. What do you mean you can't sell that to me? Well, no, as of 4 years ago, anybody with a domestic violence cannot own a gun. I'm like, oh, I said, I already have guns. He goes, well, you must have been buying them from other people instead of stores. And I go, yeah, I've been, you know. So anyway, I had to get rid of all my guns. Did I have to? No. And some of my friends say keep them, some say don't, you know. But how am I going to, you know, like I said, I've got that gut feeling in me today, right? If the law says I can't have a gun, because everybody's like, you got your Second Amendment rights. No, I don't. It was taken away from me, period. You know, if the law says I cannot own a gun, I cannot own a gun. Why would I want to go back to jail? I don't want to go to jail anymore. You know, I don't want to live like I used to live. And how can I be an example to anybody else? I'm going to start sponsoring people. How can I be an example to anybody else if I'm still doing the wrong things? I come back from jail or something, or come back and somebody's going to say, sponsee's going to say, what happened to you? You know, why were you in jail? Well, I got told I couldn't have guns anymore, but I still kept them in my house. Why would you want me for your sponsor? I'm not doing the next right thing. You know? Just stuff like that. You know, it's just now everybody's got their different way of thinking stuff, but I mean, that's where some people say I take it too far, you know? In my life today, I don't want to be that guy that goes back to jail. I don't want to do the wrong things anymore. Why would I want to? You know, I'm in a good place today. You know, I have hope, faith, courage. I have joy. I have happiness. You know, center of balance comes once in a while. You know, sometimes I'm on that road about once every month. It's all of a sudden you get in my truck and I'm just having this great day. You know, and it's just a man, peaceful day. You know, but they're all good days. So some days just you get that real even keel feeling, man. That's the awesome part. You know. And another thing is, like, I got one more thing I want to tell you. You know, I don't mean to be dragging things out, but this is stuff that happens to me. You know, it's like, I get this job in August. I've been driving truck, and like I said, I've been just tore up all companies. I had barely anybody I can work for anymore in Wisconsin. So, you know, I get these jobs, and I'm over the road. I got to do whatever I can to make a living. So all of a sudden, I'm just praying to God, can I just have a job from 7 in the morning till 7 at night, make X amount of dollars? I'd be happy. Okay, Tom. So, finally it happened. August, beginning of August, God gave me a job from 7 till 7, 8 at night. And I make exactly what I wanted, and more. Because now I'm working 5 days a week, and I'm making all this money, right? So what do? The first month in, the boss says to me, he goes, here, Tom, take this lock. You got to lock your trailer. Go to the stop. Okay. Lock it. Ooh, nice chrome lock. It's huge, too. Might fit on my bike. So I locked the truck. At the end of the day, it wasn't his lock anymore. It became my lock when I made a decision to take it home with me, which was stealing. Nobody ever knew about it, you know. Tried it on my bike. That ain't going to work, you know. I'm just going to keep it anyway. It's probably an expensive lock, you know. So 4 months go by. Tom gets only getting 4 days a week now. My 5 days a week and making big money went down. I was still making above what I asked for. But all of a sudden, you know, I was making more, so I'm keeping this lock, right? And something just came across me, you know. You've been working 4 days a week, you know, and you've been complaining and whining and crying. And you got this lock that's theirs. Maybe God wants you to take that back. And I'm serious. This is what I told. So on a Tuesday, I take this lock back. After 4 months of working, 4 days now, right? So I take this lock back on a Tuesday. Wednesday hits. Ain't get a day off yet. And I walk in, I go to my boss, I go, this is your lock. You gave it to me to use the trailer a couple months ago. And I forgot it in my bag. I lied, a little white lie there. But I wasn't going to tell him I actually stole it. So now all of a sudden, you know, Wednesday comes, Thursday comes, Friday comes. I get to work 5 days. After 4 months, I worked 5 days in a row. The next week, I worked 5 days in a row. No, I worked 4 days, didn't I? And then about a week after that. Anyways, today. But the point was, coincidence or not, to me, it's like, you know, I had something that wasn't mine. And that's how I live today. I live today to be as honest and as best man as I can. I'm a man of compassion today. I have a conscience today. I would hurt nobody today. You know, it would have to take a lot. You know, I see people go through stuff sometimes and it kind of confuses me. Because I was the guy that was always okay. Yeah, your mom died or this happened or something. Hey, you probably got the right to use, you know. I cannot. It was finally taken away. Desire to use alcohol or drugs was taken away from me probably a couple of months ago. It took a while. I don't even have the desire to use today. You know, and I can honestly say that. And I was just a guy that I thought would never say that. You know, and I have friends that you know, that get things happen around them and they use, and now to me, I'm no perfect because it's progress, not perfection. You know, I live on a daily basis. Okay, but I just. If my spirituality, if I'm in the right place in my spirituality, agnostic, if I don't believe in God or not, there's something out there, you know? Why would I, you know, I always think to myself, why would I go out and I use, you know? It's no matter what bad happens, nothing good's going to become out of it by me going and using. Nothing, absolutely nothing good is going to happen. So when a friend comes to me and tells me this, and this happened, and then, well, I hate God because God wouldn't have let this happen if he was a good God, he wouldn't have let my mom die, or he wouldn't have let this happen, or this, or this, or this, or whatever it is, you know. Today, I just think as long as I'm in a spiritually good place, I don't have to go out there and use, because I've got you guys to come to, you know, and I got my sponsor, I got you guys, you know, I got my book to go to, I got my Bible to go to, I've been taught a new way to live. Why after 6 months, or this is just for today though, because I don't know if I'm going to pick up tomorrow, you know, just for today, I wake up and I go, I don't have to use just today, you know, no matter what it is, I don't have to use just today. I'm probably talking too long, eh? Is my 20 minutes up? So I'm sorry. I know I started out slow and stuff, but I guess the whole point is if a guy like me, that used to be able to put a knife to somebody's throat, a guy that used to beat up anybody and when he felt like it, you know, and I could do that because people would let me do that. You know, bar owners would just be like, if it was anybody else, they'd go to jail. The bar owner, did you really have to do that? And you're chuckles, man. You know, no, I got to take the guy to hospital. His nose is over here, you know, or. Sometimes I didn't even make it into bars. I'd pull up to a bar on my bike with my buddies. Some guy had touched me, because I wore colors. So if you touched my colors, you were done, you know? A guy had touched my colors, and I would beat him to the ground. And I guess we can't go in here and drink, guys. Get back, right back after I just beat the hell out of this guy, left him for dead. You know, he's not even moving. Get on our bikes and go to another bar, you know? That's the kind of stuff I did, you know? I was just crazy. So if a guy like me could change, anybody can change. I guess is what my point is, you know? There is a spirit out there, you know. There is. There really is, and we can live clean and sober. We just have to do it on a daily basis, like we do. Marty Tom, my sponsor for 2 years now, has taught me. We used to talk about chaos. I have no chaos in my life today. I can honestly say that I have no chaos, and that's a good way to. Marty has taught me. Marty, when we first met, heard my chaos for a long time. Now I call this man, and we go out for breakfast. We do whatever. Go to a meeting together. I call him probably 3-4 times a week, and we just talk now. There's no chaos. What do you mean? My girlfriend's leaving me. I got bill problems. The IRS is coming after me. This and that. No, because I've taken care of all of that now. All the stuff from my past, clearing up the wreckage of my past, is taking care of all my financial problems from the past, paying them, would it be $20 a week, whatever it is, to whoever, and I take care of that today. And as long as that frees up my mind, because now I ain't got to worry about who's going to stab me in the back next. You know, they're not really stabbing me in the back. They just want their money, you know? So they're not really doing anything to me. It was me. It was my fault. You know, I take full responsibility for my life today. I don't blame anybody or anything. I'm responsible for Tom, and that's all I'm responsible for. I'm not responsible for anybody else or anything else. I'm responsible for my actions today, and I have to pay the consequences if I do something wrong. And I don't know. That's about all I got to say today. That'll pass. Wow.